okay? It's sort of like if you ever get a hole in a sweater and like it starts to fray. I've got some of my favorite sweaters, and I just, like, Lindsay's like, throw that away. No, I like this sweater. I don't want to throw it away, but it keeps like fraying and getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the further you get with the Old Testament, the bigger that hole gets. And it's a Jesus-shaped hole. Because when you get to Jesus and he starts saying this and this and that, and didn't the prophets say this? And doesn't the scriptures say this? And so as you continue to work through this, you see how Jesus fills in that gap so that you get one story from start to finish. Genesis to Revelation is one story. We see two testaments, but both of them are pointing to this one truth that God, a holy God, wants his people, but sin gets in the way. We get in the way. And so God is going to redeem us, not just by saving us, but by working through man to save man. God becomes man to save man. It's an incredible truth. It's so paradoxical, you almost wouldn't believe it, but everything points to it. I mean, Jesus just fills that hole so nicely. Now, a lot more we could say about that, but that's really why we're studying Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is going to be pointing to Jesus, and we're going to see that even some today, especially next week. Now, working through that, I should have had a slideshow for this, just for some of the new people who are with us. Really glad you're here. You're picking up in the middle of this with us. But when you think about the Bible, try to think about, one of the things that's been helpful to me is to think about an outline or a structure to the book. A lot of times, I grew up being taught the gospel. I don't know if you did or not, but still, it was like there are some dark places in there. Like, I don't mean like dark as in like, uncomfortable and brooding and ugly, but like scary. Like, but dark as in like, I don't know what's going on here. I have no idea. You get to the divided kingdom, and I'm like, all right, this is the third Jehoiachin I've come across here. Like, what's going on? There's so many Joashes and Jehoashes, and is this the same guy or not? And it's just, it's confusing. It's difficult. What we want to do is try to simplify that. And so this has been helpful to me. It's been helpful to me in teaching other people. And so if you're teaching, as you're teaching other people, hopefully this will be helpful to you. Does anybody remember the 17 periods? Just say them with me and keep me on track because I'm bound to leave one out, right? I'll leave one out, won't I? So these are 17 periods. I'll go back and talk about them briefly. We'll just say them to begin with. You ready? Before the flood, the scattering of the people, patriarchs, exodus, wandering in the wilderness, invasion and conquest, judges, united kingdom, divided kingdom, Judah alone, captivity, return, years of silence, life of Christ, early church, and letters to the Christians. I have to do this, or I know. Like, when I get to this, like, oh, there's 17. I know I did okay. All right. And if you get a little fuzzy in there somewhere, that's all right. It's just the point is to remember. And it's sort of like having filing cabinets or bookshelves. Where, anybody have a home library? Like how do you, I don't know how you organize your home library, but I've got, like, My commentaries over here, and then I have like biblical counseling books over here, and then I have historical books over here, and then that's whatever Lindsay does over there, because she organizes it differently than I do. So however you organize it's one thing. But think of different bookshelves you have, and Shelby's laughing at me because she works at a library, but think of different bookshelves you have and what you put on those shelves. When you organize the Bible story in these 17 different shelving units, if you will, before the flood was the first one, and that's everything creation up to, yeah, it's easy, right? Before the flood, okay? And the flood is everything that happens during the flood, okay? All the things that surround, like chapter 6 through chapter 9 and 10. And then in chapter 11, you've got before the flood, the scattering of the people. And I remember that because of 11, and you've got the Tower of Babel, and it divides. So you've got chapter 11. And then chapter 12 through the end of the book is the patriarchs. Okay, that's all of Genesis. Before the flood scattered the people and the patriarchs. Patriarchs being Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and then Joseph. And we always want to say Judah, but for the sake of the Bible story, Joseph is really important. He also creates that kind of picking at the hole because he creates this Jesus-sized hole. There's a lot about the story of Joseph that points to Jesus. Before the flood scattering people, the patriarchs. Then we've got the Exodus, and that is found in what book?
Oh, Exodus.
There you go. All right. It's easy. Okay? You got to think about it. Exodus. It's also found in what other two books? Just keep going. Leviticus and Numbers. About halfway through Numbers, then we get to wandering in the wilderness, and that's Numbers and Deuteronomy. we invade the land, or they invaded the land. This is not just a story now. This is actual historical events. But they invaded the land in the book of Joshua, right? Right? Yes, Abby?
Yep.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Right. Now, Judges takes place in?
Judges.
And in the days of the Judges, Ruth, right? Ruth. If you read the book of Ruth, little link there at the beginning, it says in the days of the Judges. And you go, oh, yeah. Now, in our Bibles, Ruth follows Judges, so that's no big deal. But in the Hebrew way of organizing the Bibles, there was the Torah, the Nevi'im, and the Ketuvim. So you had the Law, the Prophets, and the Psalms. And Psalms wasn't just Psalms, it was Psalms and then all these other books that just didn't quite fit in. And Ruth is down here. And so if you're reading along, and then you get to Ruth, it's like, when did this happen? And so it links back to this other story. And there's a whole other reason for why Ruth should go over here. And it's really cool. We won't talk about it right now. So you just keep working through that. And that's helpful because when you have those organized structures, when you get to a book like 2 Samuel or 1 Chronicles, you can kind of go, what is going on here? Where am I? And you look to your bookshelf and you go, oh, United Kingdom, Divided Kingdom, Judah alone. Because Israel's already gone into captivity. The Assyrians came and took them out, and then Babylon takes Judah, and now we're totally in the captivity. And the return, and we're looking at Ezra and Nehemiah and Daniel and Ezekiel, and so we're looking at Esther. We need to kind of keep those things in structure. Hope that's helpful. If you want more of that, I can send you those outlines. Hope that's helpful. Questions, comments? Good. David, you all right? All right, now, we're in Deuteronomy. Look at chapter 4, verse 32. Could I get a volunteer, please, to read 32 through 40? And the rule is, if you look up at me when I ask for a volunteer, I can call on you. All right, Emma, would you read 32 through 40?
Chapter 4?
Yes, please. Excellent. Thank you so much. All right. It's not fair I called you to read the 10 to 40. Now, something about this God that I think is incredible is, anybody ever heard this saying about children? They're better. Did I tell you that? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, better seen and not. I never told you that, right? You've read that. Okay. Children are better seen and not heard. Has anybody else heard that before? That's sort of like a 19th century American saying. Okay, it's not very nice. Sort of. I'm not sure. Anyway, think about idolatry. Do those rocks speak? They don't. No, they don't. They don't speak. Do they eat? In fact, they lay out food before those idols, and then they have to go and take the food away because it'll rot. They don't speak. They don't eat. They don't hear. So you've got these gods that can be seen. And if you were to go and visit, the temple of Baal, or you would go and see the Asherim. You would see them. And you would see the thing, the gold and the silver and the jewels and all of the ceremony around this, and it would be awesome. In Nashville, Tennessee, they have the Parthenon. It's a replica to scale of the Greek Parthenon, right? And you go in, and there is Athena. And she's gorgeous in a Grecian. They had different ideas of beauty then, but like to the Grecian way of thinking, she's gorgeous. And there's gold and there's silver, and she's like 50 feet tall. And you're kind of intimidated and in awe of this thing a little bit. When the Israelites come into the land of Canaan, there are going to be gods everywhere. Everywhere. And you can see them, but you can't hear them. God is the kind of God who is better heard than seen. Not seen and heard. Like you can't see him. If you did, you'd die. But he does speak. And the point being made here in Deuteronomy 4 is, what other people has ever heard the voice of a God speaking to them? And the answer to that question is, nobody. Nobody. And if they had, like, would they even live? Not only did God speak to them, but he spoke and then they lived. He allowed them in his mercy to listen to him. And so there's a very special kind of relationship. Now, ponder this for just a moment. How does it indicate relationship that God speaks? This may be obvious, but how does it indicate God wants a relationship because he speaks? I'm sorry? Nobody else is talking? Yeah, well, yeah, of all the gods that are available, this is the one that says, you know, I am the Lord your God. Abby?
I think of speaking, I think of a relationship, a personal situation. So, like, if you're going to be speaking, then he's going to speak to us what we need to be spoken.
Yes. Yeah. There are words everywhere. Like, this says peach truck, okay? I don't have a relationship with this box. There are words you can read. There are things that you can look at on a stone, on a document, and it's words. But the fact that there's a speech attached to this, there is desire, there's motive, there are thoughts, there's a will that's being communicated, and you only do that with a person. There's a relationship here. Noah?
It also applies in the face of some of that would come down by deism, the idea that God created and walked away.
Yes. The great clockmaker, right? He wound it up and then let it go. Some of us have dogs, right? Now, you might have a relationship with your dog. But let me ask you this. If you got home today and your dog said, "I was worship," would your relationship change? And so it's not just like, hey, there's this person in the sky that I love, and I sort of have these vague inclinations toward him. He's speaking to us. He's communicating his desire and his will. It's a different kind of a relationship. It's not just there's an object for me to love. There's someone who's telling me what he thinks, and I have to interact. Husbands and wives, you get this. She has different ideas than you do sometimes, for better or worse. I mean, usually for better, of course. But she has different ideas. He has different ideas. And suddenly you have to figure this out. One of you's got to move, or both of you. And in the case with God, who does the moving? We do the moving. What's interesting about the Bible story is that God also does the moving, though, doesn't he? Because he moves from heaven to earth. You see his compassion in this. And he invites us then to move toward him. And so we can come with him. So this relationship idea, it's holy. It's amazing. It's awesome. There's love. There's compassion. There's all that wrapped up in here. I wanted to touch on Deuteronomy 4 before we jump into chapter 5.
Yeah.
I think something very important that he wants to tell us. Yes. And And note, too, that this isn't just a voice. It comes with all of the visual stimuli, the physical stimuli of the fire on the mountain. So it's not just, I had sort of this psychotic experience. I heard a voice. You should probably go see somebody. It's not that kind of thing. There's a whole nation of people who heard the voice of God from the mountain and lived to tell the tale. Noah?
And this is an interesting contrast, but I think it's a contrast. Well, he says, the man goes out into the wood, he chops down a tree, he shapes it into a form of an idol, then he uses the rest of it to take him warm himself and cook his food, and
right.
Then he bows down in front of what he just made.
Yeah, is that Isaiah 40? And what made him choose that half of the log instead of that half of the log? Well, this is your lucky day, log. You're getting burned for my dinner tonight. Yeah, absolutely. Idolatry doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But we do it. We do it all the time. Okay, let's look at chapter 5, Deuteronomy 5. We've got about 15 minutes to work through here. We're not going to read the Ten Commandments here. We looked at them briefly when we went through Exodus. There is some distinction, interestingly, between the Ten Commandments listed here and the commandments are the same. But there are some differences, and they're interesting. But as you work through here, let me just ask you this. What stands out to you about these commandments? Anything seems significant to you? Elijah, what'd you get? This is question one from your handout, if you have that.
The summarization? Basically, the Ten Commandments, don't worship other gods, don't make carved images, don't take the name of the Lord in vain, observe the Sabbath, honor mom and dad, don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't steal, don't bear false witness, don't covet.
Okay, good basic rules of life. And if everybody in the world did that today, we wouldn't have a lot of need for other rules, would we? Okay, Abby?
I was going to say, it seems front-loaded with, again, relationship with God.
Yes.
Rules.
Yes, yeah. Everything about loving other people in the Bible is dependent on what we think about God. I've been doing some study recently for other studies. Where does morality come from? Where do ethics come from? And there's a big push today from atheistic circles to try to prove that morality has some tether, some grounding in just who we are as people. And I would agree. But we differ wildly on who we are as people. You can't prove morality without God. There's no reason for morality without God. But morality, if you can prove morality, morality does, through the back door, prove God. That's a whole other discussion. Now, one of the any other things that you see as being significant through these Ten Commandments? Levi?
He's very specific.
Yeah, God's not leaving it to chance. Like, you guys figure out some good ground rules, and you know, we'll go with that. He does declare what he wants. David?
When he teaches us about the first and the greatest commandment, which is essentially, complete, basically, is it fair to say a summary of, a completion of the Ten Commandments,
He has distilled down these Ten Commandments into these two major commandments. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's well said. And we'll get to that in chapter 6 as well. Elijah?
So I had a couple questions. The first one was with the, don't covet your neighbor's, basically everything. Does that mean, you couldn't be oh, here's a cool horse. Man, I wish I had something like that. So where does that go exactly? Does the coveting line come in?
That's a good question. That's a good question. Is it wrong to desire things? Let me ask you this way. Did Jesus ever desire things? Think about when he instituted the Lord's Supper. I have long desired to have this meal with you. And there he just says it. I've wanted this thing. So desire is not wrong. Wanting things is not wrong. But what that wanting does to us, notice in Colossians, I think it's Colossians 3. And verse 5. Paul writes here, put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you, sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Here, Paul helps us to make the connection what covetousness really is. It's not just saying, I want this thing. It's saying, I want it so much that I will obey it so I get it. I'm going to do what I do because I want what I want, and I want it so much that I'm willing to disobey God in order to get it. I'm either going to sin in order to get it, or I'm going to sin when I don't get it. And that's an important connection to make. It's a really good question. Idolatry is something we don't, like, I don't have little statues in my closet at home. But Ezekiel 14 describes the elders of Israel coming to Ezekiel with their idols in their hearts. And if you had looked at them, you wouldn't have thought about, these guys are idolaters. But God looked at them and said, those are idolaters. And he could see what was going on and said, they wanted what they wanted. And they're either going to sin in order to get what they wanted, or they're going to sin when they didn't get what they wanted. For example, and I'll get you in a second, when I was a little kid, I have this vivid memory. We went to Walmart back when Walmart was just like a store. Like, it wasn't like Super Walmart. But like, you went to Walmart, and they always had the candy, like, right down here. And I was going through, and I asked my mom, could I have, I think it was spearmint. Like, what's the green one? Anyway, it doesn't matter. But I asked for some gum, right? And she said no. Yeah, Alex, no. And she said no. Well, I took the gum, and I put it in my pocket. And we went out to the, I don't recommend this, we went out to the parking lot. And I don't know, like, in the park, we hadn't even gotten to the car. And I took it out and unwrapped it and started eating gum. And my mom turned and said, where did you get that? Which wasn't a question. And we went back in, and she paid for it. And then we went back out, and then I paid for it. I didn't get what I wanted initially. So what did I do? I sinned in order to get it. Now, what if I hadn't taken it? But instead, I had a bad attitude the rest of the afternoon. I didn't get what I want, but I was willing to sin because I didn't get what I wanted. You see, the desire there that has captivated my behavior and my emotions, that's covetousness. A desire that's elevated to my master. Does that help a little bit? All right, go ahead. Good question. Good question. I think growing up, I often heard, you know, like if I say, oh my, and I use whether it's the name of God or it's like a euphemism. So God, gosh, golly, geez, fill in the blank, and I feel kind of dirty even saying this. But I don't think it's so much that as it is, I'm a Christian, I'm one of God's holy people, and then wearing that name, I go and behave like anybody else. Or I will take an oath in the name of God and then break that oath. It's more about what I do in treating the name of God. Now, is saying, oh my, part of that? I think so. But it's more of just treating God's name and the identity I have because of God's name in any unholy way. That's taking the Lord's name in vain. Thoughts or questions about that idea? Okay. Really good question. Noah? Yeah, that's right. And we can have a long conversation about that. That's exactly right. Is God's name is holy. Now, the Jews went in one direction with that. They swung really hard, which is why we don't have Yahweh in our Bibles today. We have Lord, capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, instead of just Yahweh, because they saw that we can't even say the name of God unless we not treat it holy. We should say the name of God. We should say Yahweh. Say Jehovah Jireh. I mean, just say his name, but say it with reverence and awe and fear and respect and love and compassion. Not compassion. Love and devotion. Good questions. Other questions? Okay. Amy, did you have a thought? All right. Lee. Deuteronomy 14? Good, good.
Manservant, slave, everybody got a rest.
Yes.
This was revolutionary. This
that time, you were working several days a day.
Right. And think about who the Israelites are and were. They were slaves. And so God says, remember, you were slaves, and so here's how you should treat people. So look at Deuteronomy 5, verse 15. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. The Lord your God brought you out. So one of the distinctions between the list here and Exodus 20 is in Exodus 20, the reason for the Sabbath is in 6 days God created the heavens and the earth, rested on the seventh. So the rest there is connected with creation. And here the rest is connected with redemption. And so their whole idea weekly was God made us and God saved us. God made us and God saved us. In a similar way, now, Sunday's not the Lord's Sabbath. It's not the Christian's Sabbath. There's nowhere in the Bible that indicates that. But in that same kind of mentality, we are thinking, my Savior, my Creator, saved me. The one who made me has redeemed me. And so there's similar identity that goes with that. And therefore, I should treat other people like, you know, the Israelites are being instructed to treat the people. Really rich stuff here. We need more time to go through this. All right.
Like, on face value, when you think of the Ten Commandments, like, you can, like, rattle off the rules. It's like the list of rules. But when you really start getting into it, God really created a framework for them.
Yes.
How to make their hearts better for him.
Yes. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, he's aiming not at their behavior only. I'm thinking about teaching a class full of kids. I think of Meredith, Abby, in teaching class. Meredith, too, when she was teaching. But you know who the kids are who are like, they're nice to the teacher's face, but behind their backs, you're like, I know you're just a little snot. Like, I know you're just a punk. You know, like, you're not, you know how to jump through the hoops, but I see you. God's not fooled by behavior. Okay, he sees the heart behind it. Now, if our heart's right, behavior will be right. And the only way to really get behavior right all the time is if the heart's right. So it's a challenging thing, but God is aiming for the heart. I want to look at chapter 6. We've got just like less than 5 minutes here. I want to talk about the teaching. Let me say this briefly. The Ten Commandments, we're not under the Ten Commandments today. This may seem strange. Sometime look at 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 1 through 3, in fact, the rest of the chapter. But in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, Paul makes the point that we're not under this covenant that was made with tablets and stone. And so I've said that to some people, and they go, do you mean it's okay to murder? It's okay to commit adultery? No, what? No. We're not under the Ten Commandments anymore. Those laws are not abiding. And yet, many of them have been transferred. In fact, all of them, you could say, have been transferred in a different way. Jesus says, it's not just about murder, it's about what? Anger in my heart. It's not just about adultery, it's about lust in my heart. It's not about a day of rest, but Jesus is my Lord of the Sabbath. He is my rest. And I've entered in, and I'm looking forward to entering into another rest. Ultimately, Hebrews points to that. So consider that too, that there is a new covenant, a different covenant. We're not under the Ten Commandments today. If you want to talk more about that after class, we can do that. For sake of time, let's look at chapter 6. This is what David Bacali was referring to in 6, 4, and 5. The greatest commandment is called, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. And these words I command you today shall be on your heart. I want to hear from you thoughts that you had. This is question number 5. Consider the teaching that God intended would happen in Israel according to Deuteronomy 6. How would this kind of instruction shape the nation? If an Israelite heeded this teaching, what would he think of God, of himself, and how might this teaching relate to you today? Also, question 3, the very last question, what would this process look like for us today? If you were to kind of imitate the teaching from Deuteronomy 6, how would you get this across? In other words, like, for instance, look at Deuteronomy 6, verse 20. When your son asks you in time to come, what is the meaning of the testimonies and the statutes and the rules the Lord our God has commanded you? How do you pass on this kind of love for God? If it's, Hear, O Israel, you shall love the Lord your God, how do you pass that on? Now, I'm asking for practicals. David?
Maybe just reflecting on what the various things that God has done for you, and really just looking at the principles behind those things, especially maybe beginning to just think about mercy, you know.
Okay.
God's mercy for us, you know, the way we can sort of try to just really just having a mind of doing our best to be merciful to others, especially when
okay.
we think about, like, okay, like, you know, God has blessed you so much and even argued mightily in some instances, in spite of your, you know, some of the, you know, what some might say extreme things that, you know, he may have seen you do or say yeah. or even others, you know, but, you know, still, you know, having a mind that, you know, when you run into situations where you feel like you've been wrong, you know, not, you know, instantly going for blood, but, you know, just trying to do your best to work through it.
So I can communicate
and, you know,
my redemption story
yeah,
by the way that I show
yeah.
mercy. Good.
Right.
I just think of, in your family, starting in your home, you know, like, growing up, I had to learn what was right. And I think here, you know, there's still a very, very long way away from entering the Promised Land.
Yes.
And they have to, you know, this chapter is the same chapter at the end. Like, they have to keep being repeated. So I just think that practicing and repetition and moving it through generations of the family is how it never goes away.
So having those traditions that you keep going back to, Let me ask you this question. Every Saturday, the Jews are going to be like, hey, we're not going to be working today. And here comes little 5-year-old Elisha. I'll just say a different name. But I'm thinking of you. But here, why, Dad, are we not working today? And you say, well, Dad, you know, God gave us the day off. And that's the end of your conversation? Or is that an opportunity to say, well, it's the seventh day. Do you know what God did in 6 days and then on the seventh day? And you take a moment, because you have all day. You take a moment and you explain that story. Or we rest today because God gave us rest from slavery. I came out of Egypt. And you take those moments. And so the repetition is important. Repetition is super important. And God builds that in. But a lot of people go to church. A lot of people go, like, read the Bibles, say prayers, sing the songs. They do all the stuff. But if it doesn't matter to you, it's not going to matter to your kids. You got to show that it matters to you personally. Let me give you just a quick example. In Psalm 51, anybody remember what Psalm 51 is about? That's David making his appeal to God for mercy because of his sin with Bathsheba. And I want you to look at Psalm 51, verse 13. This is after God has, in verse 12, restored the joy of salvation. And in verse 13, he says, I will teach transgressors your ways, and sinners will return to you. In other words, David is saying, I'm going to make it personal. I'm going to communicate why God's mercy is important to me. And so one of the things that we can do is we're practicing Deuteronomy 6 with our children, is we can explain, I came out of Egypt. I came out of slavery. I came out of bondage. God saved me, and this is my experience. And at different age-appropriate levels, as David was talking about the mess that we were in, you know, there are specific sins that it's appropriate for me to start sharing with my kids. Or when I do sin, and they know it, last night I had to apologize to you. Because I did something to her, and then, you know, and so she forgave and hugged me, and we were restored there. But, like, when you mess up, not only do you show mercy, but you seek it. You gotta ask for mercy. That's going to make an impact. I hope will make an impact. Now, what if I don't have kids? What if I'm a single person, or what if my kids are all gone, or whatever the case may be? 1 Timothy 1 and 2. We've been working through 1 Timothy with David Rafe. What does Paul call Timothy? My son. You may not have physical kids like with you right now, but you've got some people you can influence spiritually. You've got some family that needs this kind of generational, traditional, like emotionally packed teaching built in. So this, like my brother, my sister, these others that are like, this has got to happen. so that this nation continues on. And as Abby said, like, we're not there yet. Like, this is a nation that hadn't made it in yet. We got a long way to go. We need this. So be thinking about ways practically to get this kind of teaching across. I said less than 5 minutes because I knew it was like 2 minutes. So we're out of time. But other thoughts or questions? We didn't get into a lot of chapter six, but we've got to keep trucking. Other thoughts or questions? Okay. Hope this is an encouraging, helpful study. We'll pick up with, if I keep going back and picking up stitches, we'll be in trouble. But we'll pick up in chapter seven. The good thing is Deuteronomy is fairly repetitive, but the themes are powerful, so we'll be picking up on some things that we didn't look at last time in the coming verses. All right, let's say a prayer, and then I'll let you go. Father, thank you so much for loving us, for saving us. We need your holy teaching. We want to be instructed, and we come to you so that we know how to respond. Thank you for speaking and having these words written down for us. Please be with us as we go about the rest of this week. And may we be pleasing to you in all we do. In the name of Jesus, we pray. Amen.